Good to see each one of you this evening, and we are always thankful to have visitors with us and hope that the things that we talk about this evening are going to be of profit to each and every one of us. Tonight, what I'd like to do is take a few moments to talk about what I think can be one of the biggest problems that we face within our spiritual walk. And at first, you're going to think it a bit odd, but I think as the lesson goes on, you may find that it's true in your life. And that's the matter of apathy. We sometimes think about apathy without really thinking about apathy. We practice apathy without thinking about the fact that we're practicing apathy. And sometimes it's one of those words, and there are a few of them for some of us, and there are a lot of them for others of us, that we kind of know what it is, but we don't really know what it is. So I thought I'd give us a definition of it. Apathy is a lack of emotion or feeling, a lack of interest in things generally found exciting, interesting, or moving. Do we find apathy within our lives? The reality is yes, from time to time. We can find it in every walk of life. We can find it within our homes, sometimes within our marriages, though that has never happened to me. We can find it within our work. We can find it, more importantly and more dangerously, within our spiritual development within our lives. I think it can manifest itself in a number of ways. It can manifest itself in whether or not we take seriously the idea of coming to church, as the expression goes, our attendance. I will tell you that I gave some thought as to when would be the appropriate time to present a lesson, and it may seem strange to you that I have presented a time that usually we could look out into the audience and say, you of all people are probably the least apathetic, at least as far as the outward manifestation of your presence on a Sunday afternoon service. Because our numbers, and this is true in many congregations, our numbers are smaller tonight than they were this morning. Granted, some of it was the result of visitors, but perhaps some was the result of apathy on the part of others, and that's why they're not here tonight. I by no means want us to look around to see who's not here and decide, okay, they're the ones Joe was preaching to, they're the ones that are apathetic. But I do want us to be aware of the danger for our lives, and if we will strengthen ourselves against apathy, then we can be of greater benefit to those who are apathetic. Do you remember one of the first instructions you're given as you get on a plane and as the steward or stewardess is up there giving you the instructions with regard to the air mask, if it should fall down and you have a small child with you? Do they tell you to put that air mask on the child? No, they do not. They tell you to put the air mask on yourself. Because if you pass out trying to put the air mask on the child, there's a possibility that you'll bring harm not only to yourself, but to the very one you were hoping to save most of all, and that is your child. And so they tell you to put the air mask on yourself first and then put the air mask on or give assistance to your child. Well, that's the idea I have in mind with the lesson for tonight. Letting us steel ourselves against apathy that we might be of encouragement to those whom we begin to recognize as manifesting, as exhibiting apathy within their lives. I think one of the things that we need to begin, first of all, with is recognizing what makes apathy a sin. I would grant you that most of you would say, well, just on its surface, it's pretty obvious that it's a sin. But I think there are some very distinct things that are going to be evident that really should make us concerned about apathy and not simply say, well, yeah, that's a problem that can arise within our lives from time to time. For one thing, it can be said that apathy can be very destructive to a congregation. It has a negative impact upon us, and it is therefore destructive. Solomon, the ecclesiastical writer, says in Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 18, because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. You don't have to drive very far from this building to come across some houses that are falling apart, and it's evident from the outside. But what could be scarier is this. You might drive by some houses that on the outside don't look like they're falling apart, and yet they are. And I mean structurally, not even reflecting on what might be going on inside in relationships. But the ecclesiastical writer makes a point, and that is when we stop doing the things that need to be done, the decay sets in. When we don't patch what needs to be done, the water damage gets greater. When we don't paint what needs to be painted, the protection that that paint was offering begins to cause the destruction of the building. And so it is in spiritual matters regarding the church. What we end up doing is leaving work undone that needs to be done. When we fail to be in attendance as we should be, when we let other things get in the way of supporting our gospel meetings, when we let things get in the way of exhorting one another, when we begin to think that I don't need to encourage the preacher, I don't need to encourage the Bible class teachers, I don't need to encourage the song leaders, I don't need to encourage the parents that are raising the children. What I'm beginning to do is lay the groundwork of neglect on my part, and therefore by not encouraging the weak, by not being willing to check in on people who are not feeling well and doing well, slowly but surely, that aspect of the work goes undone. It's been my impression in the 2.5 years we've been together that the congregation here does not perceive me to be the person who's to do your work. And I thank God for that. Because I barely can do the work I'm to do. My responsibility is my responsibility. And your responsibility is your responsibility in service to God and in seeing that we become the strongest we can be as a congregation. And so therefore, too often we will think that the divisions, and especially we're studying Bible authority right now, the divisions in the auditorium class here, the divisions that can come from institutionalism, that's what'll destroy a church. I suggest to you that probably there's more destruction done to a congregation through apathy than any apostasy that they might find themselves following with regard to how they use the treasury or in some other matter. I'm not talking about the sheer numbers of groups. I'm talking about congregations who have stood faithfully on what we've come to know in the last half century or so as the issues. The greater danger we face is the matter of apathy. Spiritual needs end up going unsatisfied. The things that need to be addressed don't get addressed. When the congregation doesn't say to the preacher, we need lessons on this and we need lessons on this, he's not always wise enough to see what needs to be addressed and therefore to address them. You know, I have an expression with people that are riding with me in the car. And that is this. If you see that we're about to do something foolish, well, back up. If you see I'm about to do something foolish as the driver, you feel free to speak up. And if it gets really scary, you feel free to yell at me to pay attention. I know people that are bothered. Don't be telling me this. Husbands, I'm under the impression we sometimes have that attitude about driving. We want our wives and anybody else in the car to stay quiet. If you think I'm not seeing somebody coming to that intersection kind of fast, though I have the right of way, speak up. The same is true, but to a greater degree because of the spiritual importance, the same is true with regard to spiritual matters. There are spiritual needs that need to be dealt with that require more than simply one person's observation and perspective. Paul gave this instruction to Timothy in 1 Timothy, the 4th chapter, verse 13. Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. As the evangelist here, and I don't even know if I want to use the word the, but as an evangelist here, that's a responsibility that I take very seriously. And as the one who stands before you the most, doing the most talking, it's one that you should take very seriously as well to help me to be aware of things that need to be touched on, things that we need to be reminded of on a regular basis. It's destructive also because we find that it lowers the whole idea of our worshiping together and what it's all about. When we engage in apathy in our worship, we find that we're doing things that just cause us not to get the most out of the lessons presented. And I would venture to guess that the men that you've had standing in your pulpit over the years, and I'm going to include myself in this, and it is by no means a slap on the back for myself, but the men that you've had standing before you, most of whom I've known personally, were men of integrity with a desire to meet the spiritual needs of this congregation. And the lessons that were being presented in many cases were more excellent, and I'm not fishing for compliments, in many cases were more excellent from an oratory perspective than what I might do, from a material perspective than what I might do. But even so, that effectiveness is damaged when we find ourselves playing on the phone, when we find ourselves passing notes back and forth, things that are not relevant to the spiritual things going on. I sometimes wonder, and I know we turn off the phones primarily, or we turn them where they ring or won't come on. We can default, and that happens to be a computer kind of term. We can default to the idea, well, I use my phone for my Bible. Yeah, and when nobody's looking, I use my phone to check what's going on Facebook. When we find ourselves distracted, what we end up doing is missing perhaps an important thing that whomever the speaker was intended for your ears to hear. You know, we don't simply get up and for our visitors, this isn't a chewing out this group at all. This is just a reminder to us. The things that are chosen are based on what the speaker thinks is needed. And therefore, he's put in the time to put it together and wants it to be heard and wants the application within our lives. And so let's be careful. Especially on Sunday mornings, we have a lot of cute little babies here, little kids. It's easy to distract ourselves in watching what they're going to do. One of the most frustrating things to me in the years of my preaching is when individuals, and I haven't seen this here yet, Somebody has a newborn baby, and for some reason they think everybody behind them should see what a beautiful child it is. And so they lift that child up. I've seen this done. Benny's seen this done. Lift that child up and we'll bounce it. Now, you people on the back pew, you can do that all day long, except you may be losing out on the lesson. But like everybody, the next five rows back should be seeing how cute the baby is. Let's just all admit the babies are cute. They're going to do cute things, but not cute enough to distract us from hearing a message about the Word of God. Well, apathy oftentimes allows us to create the distractions that cause people to miss important points that they may have needed to catch hold of to go to the very next point. Paul said this, or Luke rather, wrote this in Acts 17:11. These are more noble than those in Thessalonica in that they received the word with all readiness and searched the scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so. Are we searchers of the scriptures? Are we on a daily basis, not just here in the assembly, on a daily basis looking at what the word has to say for our lives to improve our lives? I would hope so. We've been talking about our worship services on Sunday mornings, and we use this in relation to the whole matter of singing as opposed to instrumental music. But let's just bring it to the point of how we can use it and how the devil wants us to abuse it. Speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing and making a melody in your heart to the Lord. Our song service is a time to be lifting one another up. It is also the time for God to hear us praise and magnify His name. And that's a wonderful thing. But notice this passage says it has another purpose, and that is simply to bring out within us and for one another a greater joy of being together in worship to God. It's in the first chapter, or in the first book, the 11th chapter, 24 to the end, almost to the end of the chapter. And when he had given thanks, this is a reference, Jesus is speaking, Paul's referencing. He broke it, that is the bread, and said, "Take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you, this do in remembrance of me." In the same manner, he also took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the New Testament, New Covenant in my blood. This do as often as you drink it in remembrance of me, for as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you do proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. Therefore, whoever eats this bread and drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner is guilty of the body and of the blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body." In a couple of weeks, and perhaps even next Sunday, we'll be talking about the communion as we talk about finding a fellowship of believers. But simply take note of the importance of what's going on when we observe the Lord's Supper. The remembrance of the death of Christ. And be careful that apathy simply does not simply make it a plate that's passed, that you'll either choose the homemade stuff, choose the national brand stuff, or choose the individual wafer. Any of them are fine, but if it simply is, this is what I do as it comes down the line, and then the cup comes, and I just want to make sure I don't spill it, and that's about all I think about, and we are indeed giving ourselves personally. Others may not even see it. It's like the house that looks good on the outside but is falling apart. It is giving us an internal signal that something's wrong and we need to pay attention to it. And you know, really, kind of saving this point for the last, in a sense, It removes God from His place as number one in our lives. There in Matthew, the 13th chapter, this warning is given in verse 22 with regard to the various soils where the seed is sown and falls. Now he who received the seed among the thorns is he who hears the word and cares, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and he becomes unfruitful. Let's not allow ourselves to be choked off by apathetic attitudes and apathetic thinking, because ultimately apathy can doom us to hell as much as any other sin that we might think of or that we might have engaged in. We need to recognize the signs of apathy. I've alluded to them in some ways. But first of all, we note the fact that indeed our zeal begins to decrease. And what we sometimes do, especially as we get older as Christians, is just suggest this is who I am. This is what happens when we mature as Christians. When we mature as human beings, our bodies do indeed slow down. But when we mature spiritually, that doesn't mean that somehow now our zeal also is going to be something that decreases. Paul told the Romans in the 12th chapter in verse 11, being fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. There's no drop off. There's no drop off from the time you came out of the waters of baptism. Every day is to be a day of fervent zeal for the Lord and service to Him. In Acts 8 and verse 4, therefore those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. Remember the context? Stephen had been stoned to death. The people were afraid. Persecution was coming. And they left and they didn't keep their mouths shut. The very thing that was causing people, and by the way, not only had Stephen been stoned to death, but as you're reading the first verses of chapter 8, people are being put in prison. People are being dragged out of their homes. Well, the folks that had been there first to just observe Pentecost sometime earlier, they're saying, wait a second, this is serious now. We've seen or heard about Stephen. Now some of the friends that were taking care of us because we had run out of money, now they're going off to prison. Let's get back home and keep our mouths shut about what happened up in Jerusalem. No, they didn't do that. They said, let's get out of here, but let's take the word with us. That's the attitude we need to have every day of our lives. The sign of our spiritual interest decreasing is also something that we can look at internally. And I would grant you that some of these things will be evident to others also. There in Acts, the 10th chapter, when Cornelius is sending for Peter, we note that he says, so I sent to you immediately, and you have done well to come. Now, therefore, we are all present before God to hear all the things commanded you by God. Cornelius said, come on in, Peter. I've got the family, I've got the household, and we're ready to hear the message. It's a fair question to ask. What's the drudgery of getting up on Sunday morning and coming to services? What's the drudgery of ending a hard day at work on Wednesday and coming to services? Having the afternoon on Sunday and having a pretty good nap if your dog doesn't lick you in the face. Getting up and coming in at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Listen, we need the zeal, the enthusiasm that Cornelius experienced. Peter says in 1 Peter the 2nd chapter, the first two verses, therefore, laying aside all malice, all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking, as newborn babes desire the pure milk of the word that you may grow thereby. This is not, and you've heard me say this before, this is not a passage directed to new Christians. We sometimes get that in our heads because it uses the term newborn babes. And that's a term that sometimes is connected to the new Christian. But he's talking about the eagerness to eat, the eagerness to be filled. We need to have that within our lives each and every day. We need indeed to not let zeal diminish within our lives. We should have a desire to talk with God. We talked about this morning, and it's worthy of mentioning again. In fact, I'm willing to read the entire verse to you again tonight. Pray without ceasing. I would hope you cannot number the times you went to God in prayer today or yesterday or will tomorrow. So I'm not talking about those times when you might be able to set aside a moment for a very formally structured prayer, but rather what we often call those little arrows that we shoot up to God in prayer, about something that just touches our heart, some thanksgiving we have, some apprehension we have, some call on Him with regard to a need within our lives. Jesus says over in Matthew 12:34, "Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." You know He's talking to those scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites. Don't let Him be talking about us. This is one time. You know, we've talked about the fact that oftentimes when Christ makes intercession, when He's a mediator for us, that's a wonderful thing. It's a humbling thing to think that God will turn, the Son will turn to the Father and say, "I know her. We know her. I know him. We know him." And uses our name. That happens. But don't let it be that they converse about us as sometimes a brood of vipers, as having evil things to say because of the way the apathy has taken over in our lives. Do secular things take an increased interest within our lives? Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy, the second chapter in the fourth verse, "No one engaged in warfare entangles himself in the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier." You know what that's really saying there is? And we don't really think about it this way, but the man who volunteers to go off and fight for his country is in fact saying, "I need to be prepared to lay down my life." Paul is reminding Timothy, and Timothy is to remind other Christians, that needs to be our attitude as we go to war with Satan, as we carry the battle to him. How do we then come out of apathy? Well, first of all, I think it's important that we confirm, if you want even to reconfirm, our commitment and love for God. It may be something that you'll simply want to speak to your spouse, speak to your parents, speak to your siblings, speak to friends within the congregation. It doesn't have to be some public forum such as this, but to simply confirm that indeed, I need to get serious again about ordering things in my life. Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. I need to get back to that. I need to get back to the principle of being the husband God wants me to be. I need to get back to being the submissive wife God expects of me. I need to be the parent to my children that God demands of me. And I, as a child, need to be respectful to my parents as God expects me to be. And there can be times in our lives when we get lax in any of these things. Reaffirm, perhaps in conversation to the ones that you have found yourself having apathy toward, reaffirm to them that commitment. Remembering what the Lord said there in John 3:16, "God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life." That's the commitment that we need to remind ourselves of. That's what we need to do. We need to get to work for the Lord. Get back to that old-fashioned idea of naming a few people in your mind that need the gospel. You've talked to them in the past. Start praying for them again. You haven't prayed for them for a while because it seemed useless. Start praying for them again. And then look for that little opportunity to throw a little bit of the seed, water a little bit of seed, and then perhaps at some point be able to get back into a serious conversation with them about their souls. Let me tell you one of the things that's a danger, and I heard it just this week. Somebody making the observation, and it's nobody present today, somebody making the observation about you got to be careful about approaching them, not scaring them off. That's especially true for us as parents or family members. We don't want somebody to come in and scare them off because, see, we're taking these baby steps for them. Well, guess what? While I'm taking baby steps toward eventually telling them their soul's in danger, the Lord may come. Would you take baby steps if a house was on fire? No. Apathy can be overcome by working for the Lord and understanding that you're working for the Lord. Paul again tells Timothy in 2 Timothy 2 and 2, "And the things which you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." Remember who the faithful... I'm going to use my pointer tonight. Remember who the faithful men are here? This is not a reference to the male of the human species. It's a reference to humans, men and women, sharing Christ with the lost. James says, "If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep himself unspotted from the world." I honestly fear at times that many will stand before the judgment day and say, "We didn't abuse the treasury with some children's home that was taking care of anybody but real orphans. We didn't do that. But we found ourselves with hearts that were not pure."